All righty, GERD, Prilosec. Does advertising work?
Yes.
Oh, baby, it works. Evidence indicates 36% of otherwise healthy Americans suffer from heartburn at least once a month. 7% have heartburn as often as once a day. About 2% of the adult population suffers from GERD based on objective measures, going down the throat, taking a look. It gets worse after the age of 40, but most commonly these patients have had the symptoms for decades before they go to anybody because they've been doing what?
Tums.
Dum-da-dum-dum. How do you spell relief? R-O-L-A-I-D-S. My doctor says Mylanta. These things will be in our brains at death. They're in there permanently, and there's nothing we can do to get rid of them. Advertising works. Now, let's talk about some anatomical sites. I'm going to go through the process of making hydrochloric acid one time. When you look in the literature, you'll see them talk about the LES, the lower esophageal sphincter. And that's the one that opens up. Now, epiglottis closes. The LES is closed. I normally, like right now, you've got about 15 to 30 millimeters of positive pressure, a solid column of air in there. Why? So that if this opens up a little bit, the contents stay down. Now, if you just had the whole six-pack of beer at lunch, what is the pressure in the stomach? If it exceeds 15 to 30 millimeters, what happens? Up it goes. And we should be proud of these eructations. We should proudly exhaust our gases. Somehow, look what we do to our kids. Where's this gas supposed to go? It has to go somewhere, and we make it evil. Don't emit the evil gas. You'll go to hell if you burp. We should teach them to do it properly, politely, whatever. Or just go out in the backyard and let her rip. We guys are proud of our bodily sounds. Much more so than the ladies. Ladies like to be polite, but we want to let everybody know. No matter where it's coming from. All right. Now, you've all had the experience. Now look at the timing that should happen. 15 to 30 millimeters of positive pressure, here to here. When I go to swallow, this of course will open. What had better happen down here at exactly the same time? No, it better open, or what happens? You've had it happen where you swallow and this doesn't open, and it either blows back up or you felt that incredible pain, like somebody stabbed you in the chest. That's because that didn't open. And how could that happen? You swallow too fast, or often you're engaged in a conversation, you're totally distracted from the fact that you're eating. You swallow, and what many of us do is ninja eating. Our goal is to attack our body with food before it even knows that's what we were doing. It had no idea we were actually going to swallow, and is suddenly aware that we're eating. All right. The lower esophageal sphincter is a ring of increasing thickness of circular smooth muscle layer of the esophagus. We've talked about the timing. That resting tone is maintained by myogenic, muscular, and neurogenic nerve mechanisms. What subluxation pattern could contribute to this? Here's a patient, huh?
T8.
Could be T8. Where else? A couple of places. T8, mid-cervical. C3, 4, 5, keep the diaphragm alive. And so I will show them, here's the subluxation pattern I found. We'll be working on that. But this also can work both ways. We can have viscerosomatic or somatovisceral. Somatovisceral. So the fact that you have the irritation could be why T8 keeps going out or why C5 keeps going out. So I'm always reinforcing our fundamental message anyway. Also affected by different reflexes, the release of nitric oxide, variety of other chemical mediators there, which we won't try to deal with directly. That's research information. But they're trying to figure out what makes or causes the LES to just sporadically open up. They don't know why. Sometimes, again, it's just releasing a little pressure. And what is the pH of the stomach contents? When a meal is fully processed and ready to go, ready to leave, before the pyloric valve opens, what is the optimal pH right down at the basement?
3.
2 is too high. 3 is way too high. It'll get down as little as 0.8. The number of protons that your stomach produces is 10,000 times greater than any food you could ever consume. The acid burden to your body has nothing to do with food. Nothing you could eat could impact it. It's acids that you make. So with the pH of 0.8 or 1 or 2, whatever it is, the esophagus can handle a little blowback from that, but not very much and not very often. So you have patients who many times a day are blowing up that kind of acidity, which is what the stomach produced. It's supposed to be there. The stomach lining can handle it, but not this. And so what happens over time is you begin to erode away the mucoprotective layer. Now you begin to destroy the epithelial lining that gets rapidly replaced, but so rapidly that it can become cancerous, Barrett's esophagitis. Now you're set for esophageal cancer. And it can start with just this, simple blowing ballast every now and then. All right, so let's make some hydrochloric acid. There's lots of confusion about how this happens. I certainly didn't learn it properly in school, probably because it wasn't completely understood. What would happen to any cell if that cell actually produced hydrochloric acid within its cell membrane? What would happen to that cell? That would be a dead cell. So when we talk about cells making hydrochloric acid, we have to understand that's just loose language. The cell doesn't make hydrochloric acid, it makes the components for hydrochloric acid to form elsewhere. So here we are in the stomach, the gastric gland. All right. One of the most important things is the mucoprotective layer, the snot-making cells. Do you realize that all you are is a living, breathing, tax-avoiding donut? You have a hole in the middle. Where is it? Mouth to anus. You're just a big, expensive donut. And we never eat food the way we think. Food never enters our body the way we think. Well, I digested it. No, you didn't. What you did was a liquid extraction, no different than grinding up herbs and putting them in the cold water extraction process and draining out what you can get. We are liquid extractors. That's all we are. The thing that keeps the outside out and the inside in is that mucus protective layer. What kind of foods do you have to eat? Mucinogens, yeah, well, that would come from carbohydrates. And what else? You need fats and you need protein. You need to eat food. And when you take out, yeah, what a concept. And when you take out any of these things, especially, you know, the sickest people I see still are the fat-starved vegans. They don't have to be sick. They just are. They're doing it badly. And what they lose is the ability to produce much in the way of good mucus. There's just no oomph to the mucus, and it's dissolved. Now, the parietal cell, G cell, ECL, and chief cell are the cells of note. Parietal cells secrete hydrochloric acid. That is sloppy language. They do not. They secrete the proton, which meets with chloride ions in the gastric pit and makes hydrochloric acid there on the other side of the mucoprotective layer. So what I need to do is make it, spit it out into there, and form it there where I am somewhat protected. The G cells secrete gastrin. The G cells, gastrin. The ECL cells here a little further down secrete histamine. Histamine is a critical component of proper digestion. Wow, most of America is walking around living on what? Anti-digestives. They shut down histamine and they take the third gear out of digestion. We'll see as we go through. So no wonder we're having increased need for Pepcid AC. They're taking Claritin and other things. It's just a mess. You know, once you start on just very few drugs, what happens? Why do the others get added? To counter-effect the side effects of the ones you're already on. And once you're on four, you can bet once somebody's on three or four, it's just going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It almost has to. And the problem is there's no clearinghouse. Who ultimately saves these patients? Who intervenes, usually? No, don't think of us. They haven't gotten to us yet. Who? Huh?
God.
Often at the final meeting, it's God saying, dude, you're a little early. I've been expecting you for 87 years. Now, who professionally often intervenes and saves the patient? Pharmacist. A good pharmacist. 2 weeks ago, a pharmacist at the seminar, he said, Michael, you can't believe how bad this is. He said, there's not a day, not, he said, not in the last several weeks has there been a day where I'm not on the phone chewing a new hiney for some MD saying, what are you doing? Do you not understand what you've done to this patient or we're about to do? He said, it's incredible. He said, they're not dumb people, and they didn't intend to do that. It's just overwhelming how much is out there. All righty. So let's take a look at what we do. There are three pathways. Think of the three pathways as first gear, second gear, third gear. Each of them duplicates the others. It's just more of the same. And so the body has to go through an intricate song and dance to make hydrochloric acid. But once it does it, it's ready to slip into second and third gear if you've really swallowed that whole dinosaur. Now, if you haven't, then it's ready to back down. So I'll do the first pathway, and gastrin and histamine pathways are exactly the same. It's just more of that. So the sight, smell, taste of food causes salivation and the stimulation of the vagus nerve to release acetylcholine. Now think about that. 100 years ago, when were people thinking about food? 100 years ago, during a typical day, when were they? No, they weren't thinking about food all day. They were busy all day. When did they think about food?
When
they were hungry, it was time to eat. So as they're getting ready to go eat, or they're hungry because it's time to eat and they weren't there, they start thinking about food. Were they thinking about food all day? Not like we do today. When are we bombarded with the sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, image of food? All the time. Think about it. That stimulates a release of acetylcholine that binds to the receptor site on the parietal cell and starts the production of hydrochloric acid. I think most of America's in first gear all the time. Could that lead to acid problems? We're always telling the body, dude, we're going to eat, but we're not. Your lips say yes, yes, but your eyes say no, no. We're not going to do it. All right. Now, when acetylcholine is released, it binds to its receptor site on the parietal cell, which has receptors for gastrin and histamine. So this is just stage one. It's a multipurpose cell. A series of events happen. Binding opens up that cell to an influx of calcium plus two ions. 50% of the calcium is in the plasma in a diffusible ionized form. So what's the first thing, if I'm having digestive problems, I have to look at in the patient's diet? Calcium intake. No calcium, you can't do digestion very well. You can't produce hydrochloric acid. What? I didn't know that. I didn't either. I have to have sufficient calcium to be able to start this process. Calcium rushes into the cell. The calcium then, at a certain level, activates a series of enzymes called phosphokinases. All right? Now, inside the cell, let that gastric pit be the center aisle here. All right, so here's the body of the cell. Inside this cell, which is at the moment not active, we're not doing the food thing, there is a proton secreting pump. Because ultimately what this cell is going to do is spit out a proton into the gastric pit. Chloride ions will already be there because they diffuse through from the bloodstream. They go right through the enterocyte, right through the gastric mucosa there. But what I need to do is spit out a proton. HCl will form right here on the other side of the mucoprotective layer. I've got a proton pump, which is over here, parked in the garage, because I'm not doing HCl at the moment. It's not time for food. So the sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, or image of food causes a release of acetylcholine that binds to the cell membrane that opens it up to calcium. Calcium activates phosphokinases. Phosphokinases come over and pull the Chevy out of the garage. Here's my proton pump. The phosphokinases back it out, turn it around, and aim it over here. And it's got only one job. Well, that's it. Spits out a proton and demands higher pay because it did it so well. No one has spat such as I. All righty. Now, a proton goes out. That's a positive charge. To maintain electrical balance, if a positive charge is given up, what has to come back in? Not a negative. I need to maintain another positive. I'm giving up a positive. I need to bring a positive in. That positive is potassium. Second thing I have to look at to do this right is adequate potassium in the diet. Wow, this gets complicated. You know, to have a steak, I first have to have calcium and potassium. You do. Where do most Americans get their potassium? Bananas. They don't eat bananas. Have one banana a month. Where do they get their potassium? You're right, huh? Potatoes? French fries? Maybe, if they ate enough of them. What would be the ideal food? What color would it be? Green. What green things do those people eat? None, basically. Green M&M's, lime, jello, pistachio, chocolate chip, mint ice cream. Green ketchup and boogers. And that's about it. They don't eat green stuff. When I you know, you do it too. At most, they would eat iceberg lettuce-like material.
Green beans.
Oh, green beans. They don't even do that. That's on their plate. They don't eat it. Sorry, I'm going to spit all over you here. They might get green beans served, but they don't eat the green beans. So, you know, they're in trouble. I look at their diets, what they're telling me they eat, and I'm thinking, I see dead people. This can't be true. If this person eats what they tell me, they're already dead and they just don't know it. So they have to be lying to me. You ever feel that way? You can't be telling me the truth. Life's not sustainable with what you've told me. So at most, maybe green beans. How about broccoli? They don't eat broccoli. Who here likes broccoli? Yeah, look at you. With a good melted cheese sauce. Yeah, get that calcium. Yeah, Velveeta, Cheese Whiz, the good stuff. Huh? Goat cheese would be good. Now you're getting like to the good stuff, and you're going to ruin it. I like the spray cheese. It's better. No, how many of you spend a lot of money on good cheeses? Good cheeses. We do. We spend a lot. Often we go to the grocery store, and it's $50 worth of cheeses and one pack of cigarettes. You know, that's never. I tried to smoke. I hated it. All right, now, the chloride exchanges and so forth. So here's how I've made hydrochloric acid. Now, when you look at how complex that is, doesn't it look like the body only wants to produce hydrochloric acid when it's time to do it? And yet we're bombarding ourselves with images of food all the time. I just have to believe that has to be disastrous for us over the decades of stimulating body. I mean, try to sit down and look through an issue of Ladies' Home Journal. And how many pages can you go without a food ad that looks really good? Can you go 3 pages?
No.
It's hard to do. So that's the problem. Now, let's say that I'm thinking about food or I'm smelling food. And I start the process. The body is ready, and it goes into first gear, but I don't follow through. And I realize, that smells really good. Nah, I'm not eating now. That'll be later. I'm not even really hungry. What happens? That all just shuts down. The proton pump is tucked away, and the body says, okay, false alarm, not a big deal. We're in and out of this phase pretty easily. But now I go ahead and I chew some food and swallow. Now the G cells are stimulated because now I have swallowed food and there's something in the stomach, and they release gastrin. Gastrin binds to its binding site on the same parietal cell, and the same thing happens. It's just more of it. I've got one pathway to do it open. Now I add another one. So I'm producing more hydrochloric acid. Now with sufficient distension of the stomach, I begin to produce and release histamine. And now I go into third gear. You have all had this happen. Where at the end of a meal, perhaps larger than usual, you're finding your nose is running. That's why. You were in the third stage of digestion. That's what's supposed to happen. All right? Well, I mean, that's a sign that you're producing histamine as a result of the meal. Now, maybe you did too much for your body. I don't know that that's normal for you, but you've had it happen. Now, you'll tend to attribute it to the spices. But then you think about it and realize, but there weren't any. It was all of the Tabasco. But I didn't have any. It's a normal thing. All right? But if you're an overproducer, if that happens too easily, then that's where Andronex can help clear out that system. So I'll spend a lot of time asking the patient about just that. Do you get a runny nose after many meals, any meals, ever? No, never, ever. Not ever, ever. Not even with spicy food. Never, ever. What, never? Not ever. Hardly ever. Then I know that they're underproducing. They're not making enough histamine to carry on normal digestion. So it's just benchmark information. Is it happen occasionally or all the time? All right. So we want this to be controlled. I have to make sure there's enough calcium. Where are they going to get the calcium in their diet?
Green vegetables.
Green vegetables? Ice cream. Ice cream. Dum-dum-dum. Yeah. All righty. So the vegans come in my office. I love it. They're my greatest source of entertainment. You see, I'm at the point where I visualize practice as being solely about me. And I tell the patient, you're here for my enjoyment. No, I'm teasing. Sometimes I feel that way because there's just so much fun. Figure, well, one of us is going to have a good time, and it's probably me. And I'll ask them where they get their calcium, and the vegan will probably boast, I get all the calcium I need from green vegetables. And I'll say, no, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. I say, what do you eat? I said, let me give you some facts. Do you know how much calcium you need daily? Well, I get everything I need. How much do you need? I get it. All right, that's what I thought. You need a gram daily. Threshold for adults is 1,200 milligrams. Beyond that, you have to pee it out. It becomes a body burden. Threshold for teenage girls, especially, 1,500 milligrams per day. The most critical time to stuff her full of calcium is the very year of years that she knows you're stupid. So those teenage years, it's critical that you get a gram and a half into that young girl any way you can, shove it in her ear. Because once she leaves home, it's downhill from there. She reaches peak bone mass about 22 to 25. Your time to feed her is when you've got her at home, because once she leaves, it's crap city, and you know that. So about a gram a day is what most of us need to take. And if you eat, how many like broccoli again? Yeah, I like broccoli, love broccoli. Half cup of broccoli flowerettes, 42 milligrams of calcium, and not very bioavailable because of so much fiber. So 42 milligrams max. Oh, okay. I need 1,000 milligrams divided by 43. Okay, that's 12 and a half. Let's round that to 13 cups of broccoli daily. If you could absorb it all, and you're probably only 50% efficient, so that probably means like 20 cups of... I like broccoli. I don't like it that much. Well, I eat spinach too. Okay, that's going to take about 30 cups. We've pretty much done the meals for the day. Let's move up to collard greens. Anybody like collard greens? Yeah, especially with the bacon fat back in there, the way it's supposed to be. It's illegal to eat it any other way. You can do better, 100 milligrams per half cup. So you can do better with collard greens. You see, the problem is, we're not animals who are vegetarian. The animals who are vegetarian do what? All day. Eat. Eat and poop. Eat and poop. That's it. They have to eat massive quantities per pound body weight because, yes, it's true, all the nutrients they need are in the grains and green things that they eat, but it's not very concentrated, so they shovel through a massive amount. We can't, we won't, and we don't, so we eat the eater. I do tell my vegan patients that all the animals I eat are 100% vegan. I'm just second-generation vegan. I'm a veganoid. I eat only vegans. All righty. So for most of our patients, we're going to have to look at dairy for them unless it's problematic. Now, there's good dairy and bad dairy. So here's a new patient. You're seeing them for the first time, and they tell you, yeah, I've been eating about a half gallon of ice cream every night for the last 20 years. Well, that leads to all kinds of other issues, but is calcium then their primary problem? Probably not. Was that the best source? No, not at all. But they had some. There are probably far more pressing needs than that. So even if it was a bad source, at least it was a source, and we can improve the quality over time. So I want to spend a lot of time asking what they have eaten, not just this week, but over the last years. And I'm looking for the calcium sources. What if they've been drinking milk? Good old just regular pasteurized milk. Okay? Don't make the mistake of thinking they don't absorb calcium. That would be silly. Please never say that in polite company. Almost all of the studies done on maintaining plasma calcium have been done with homogenized milk. So please don't be so silly as to say it doesn't work. It does. It's just not the most efficient way to do it. So raw would be better if they will drink raw. Now, can you easily get raw milk here? Yep. GERD, the classic GERD, is believed to be multifactorial. And here are the issues that they think. Probably in any given case, it's one or more of these. It could be just one, but it's probably several. We'll start at the top. First, decreased salivation. What could cause that? Parotid problems. So we could do parotid PMG, but they could have some sort of viral infection, some history there. Sjogren syndrome can cause it to dry up. Now, why is that important? What's the typical pH of saliva? Essentially, it's what?
Seven.
Essentially, it's neutral, all right, and certainly neutral relative to the stomach acids. So if I blow up some stomach acids into the esophagus, that's going to naturally trigger increased salivary production and swallowing. Subconsciously, I'm just going to be swallowing. And what am I doing? I'm just neutralizing that. If I'm dried up and can't do it, then my first line of defense is destroyed. Second, impaired esophageal clearance. That muscular ring, circular muscular ring, should squeeze tight, and just like squeezing toothpaste out of a tube, should leave almost nothing. But what if it doesn't completely close? Then I attempt to swallow and move saliva or stomach contents back down, and it never closes, never washes it out. So imagine, decreased salivation and ineffective esophageal clearance, I'm in trouble. Every time I blow it up, it's going to stay there until it's neutralized by eating up my esophagus. A lot of people that way. Well, we would know that proper adjustment, if that was involved, could help correct that part. Maybe it was just subluxation. Okay. Next, transient LES relaxation. Again, they're not sure why. It just periodically opens up. Could be subluxation again. You know, we've all had, and I had this over the years, patients tell me after I'm working on them for spinal care, they came in for whatever, low back or whatever they thought they needed, and months down the road, they happen to mention, oh yeah, and my heartburn cleared up since I've been seeing you. You're what? And this is the first time I've even hearing about the heartburn, right? So we know that this can happen. Now, in a sense, I'm glad I didn't know, because you know what? I may have then tried to fix it, and it probably wouldn't have happened. So far better to be ignorant sometimes. Delayed gastric emptying. Pyloric valve doesn't open. I think sometimes that's because the pH is not low enough. It's looking, it's sensing the pH, and when the proton concentration is high enough, when I'm highly acidic, it knows that the proteins are broken down. That's the nature of the system. So if the pH is setting at around 4 or 5, it's not going to open. Now, if there's enough volume of food, it'll shove its way through. But normally, it's going to wait until it knows the chemistry is right. If it sits there long enough, warm, moist environment, what happens to the carbohydrates? They begin to ferment. Gases go up, CO2 primarily. The proteins begin to putrefy, and the fatty acids begin to rancid, there's a different word, saponify, a variety of processes they can go through. But now all kinds of other gases are produced, and I'm blowing it up because it's not supposed to be there. So here's the case. They come in, they've got GERD, complaining of heartburn, and I suggest taking Zypan with meals. Zypan, don't leave home without it. I'm going to give them hydrochloric acid and pancreatic extract to make sure that the pH is low enough to get this through normally. But the patient reads what I'm recommending and says, wait a minute, I told you I have heartburn, acid stomach, and you want me to take acid. And I try to explain you don't have the right acids and you don't have enough of it. You know what else they could do that's so cheap it's almost free? Apple cider vinegar. Jarvis's Remedy, the book is out there, Vermont Folk Medicine. If you don't have it, buy it. It's out there on the table. Dr. Lee highly recommended it. Oddly enough, in Jarvis's book, Vermont Folk Medicine, do you know what another important chapter in there is that everybody forgets about? Iodine. Yeah. Now, nowhere near the doses we're talking about, but he knew iodine was an important thing. So 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar in a glass of water with meals. The malic acid of vinegar can be enough protons to get the normal digestive process going. But instead, they start to feel the discomfort because things are just sitting here and won't go through. And what do they reach for? Tums. And what does that do? Brings the pH to what? 7, above 7. Takes it to the alkaline side. It can be 6, 7, it would be 7, 8, something like that. Now what does the body say? You are really stupid. You are so stupid, I don't want to live here anymore. Now what am I going to do with this mass of undigested food? I'll squeeze it through. It'll ferment and work its way through. And then we've got irritable bowel syndrome. And it all starts sometimes by tumming ourselves to death and not going in and getting help. So we would change what they eat, maybe the combination of foods they eat. That shouldn't matter in a healthy system, but for them, we may have to. And we might want to give them betaine hydrochloride or Zypan or apple cider vinegar with meals. All right? And that can resolve it. Okay. So what do the drugs do? Now, Tums and Rolaids are acid neutralizers. The proton pump inhibitors are not antacids. Introduced in 1995, Prevacid is a proton pump inhibitor, a new class of drugs that almost totally blocks the production of stomach acid, as though that's a good thing. So imagine eating a porterhouse steak and taking Prevacid. What's wrong with this equation? I need maximal production of hydrochloric acid, but I'm afraid I'm going to get an upset stomach, so I'll take Prevacid or Pepcid AC or whatever and shut down. Where's this steak supposed to go? Out your left ear? How am I going to digest this thing? And that's what we're doing. Taken by mouth, Prevacid is a man-made compound much more potent than Tagamet, Zantac, Pepcid, and Axid. Delayed release begins working within 1 hour and provides relief over your entire disgusting pig-laden day. What Prevacid is not. Prevacid has a different chemical structure and means of action than other drugs. It is not an antacid. It is not habit-forming. Now, this is right from a manufacturer's website. All right, now watch this language. I'm trying to figure out why this is here. Prevacid does not cause any drowsiness, sexual dysfunction, or breast enlargement.
Why those three?
Why am I being told this? What is it that I don't know? And I still can't figure it out. So you mean there are some that make you sleepy, sexy, and big-boobied? What's... Because I might have an interest, I'm not sure. Okay, the big ones, Prilosec and Prevacid. Side effects of these drugs: headaches, diarrhea, abdominal pain, and nausea. But other than that, you're feeling pretty good. Just amazing. Symptoms may worsen when you stop taking the drug, because what have you fixed? Nothing. Now look, there have been times on running through the airport, I'm leaving a seminar, like tomorrow, as soon as we're done, I'm off to the airport. And there are times when I've grabbed the wrong thing to eat. Not carbs, but just the wrong, normally good stuff, but it was crappy stuff. And I shove it down to get on the plane, and I'm sitting there on the plane, and my body says, I'm going to kill you. I told you I wasn't even hungry. But no, you decided you were going to eat that anyway. That nasty old raggedy hot dog. And you had three of them. Granted, you didn't eat the bun. That might have helped absorb some of this crap I got to deal with now. And there are times when on the plane I'm asking for Tums, Rolaids, or God help, just take me, Jesus. This hurts. There are times when, man, this is, who's been there? Where you just give me something, I'm dying. And then the question is, what did I do? Why did I do this? Why did I not listen? So let's learn from that. So I tell patients that. I said, look, I've done that myself. The question is, why did I need to do it? There's a food combination guaranteed to do that to me, and I don't know why. I love bananas. I love pineapples, and I can eat a mountain of either. I don't, but I could separately. I cannot eat them together. If I do pineapple and banana together, it will kill me. My stomach says, I'm coming right out your left nostril, buddy. And I don't know what that enzyme incompatibility is, but I'm never going to find out, and I don't care. Finally, some individuals taking Prilosec for a long time notice gradual degradation of the stomach lining. That could be because it's not really working as well as they think, but they're asymptomatic. And so they're fooled into continuing to eat improperly. Medications such as aspirin, other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, calcium channel blockers, asthma drugs, hormones may cause reflux. This lady with the 16, four of those are known to cause gastroesophageal reflux. Oh, by the way, that was one of her complaints, gastroesophageal reflux. So now what do you do with the patient? All you can do is tell the truth. Be careful what you say. You cannot and don't say, oh, the drugs are causing that. Don't say that. What you can say is, all of your subjective complaints happen to also be side effects associated with some of the drugs you're taking. I'd recommend you go back to the prescribing physicians, all 80 of them, and see if they can make a change. So you can't declare this caused that, but you can point out what's right in the PDR. These are known side effects. All right? Half the drugs she was taking were to neutralize side effects of the other drugs. A better way, and it works quickly, would be MediHerbs High Pep. It isn't fixing anything, but it can give them relief. Now, it was at first only available in a liquid form. What did it taste like? Nasty. The taste alone was known to induce GERD. And that was problematic. Now in a tablet form, it's a good blend. And each of the herbs has its own traditional history of helping with ulceration, but also excess acid production. So the deglycerinized licorice, it works in this case because we're not trying to do it as an adrenal tonic, but as a demulcent, which coats, cools, and soothes the gastric mucosa. We don't need the glycyrrhizin to do that. So this is not contraindicated for the hypertensive case as opposed to the glycyrrhized or regular licorice. So licorice itself has a history of helping. So does chamomile, both the flower and oil, essential oil extract, and meadowsweet. These four together work better than four times the individual components. That principle, of course, is synergy. So they've all been measured, and the active components of each of these does help, but it's much greater when you have them all together. Now, one of the problems always, and this is some data that you can read on your own, we won't belabor, but you'll want to know that you're getting the right level of the active phytochemical. In the case of chamomile, it's alpha-bisabolol. So I want to know that the product I'm going to use has enough. Some will tell you, some don't, because they don't do that level of analysis. Well, this does have quite enough. Long history of use for inflammation, anti-inflammatory, actually works as a sedative. You can read that. Here was a study where they took the individual components that are known to be effective and measured it and found that when combined, it far exceeded just the multiple of those individual components. Showing once again, we're not as smart as we think we are, and the great weakness of the pharmaceutical approach, which is extracting from the whole plant what they think is the most important part and super concentrating it, that then produces a drug. We always lose something when we do that. It is also anxiolytic. Many of you look that way on Monday. Well, chamomile can help for the keyed up patient. That's just a notable side effect, and there are the references. Meadowsweet, we won't belabor the history there. They all have their own, and if you have Carrie Bone's book, you can read all of the monographs on the individual components for HIPEP. It does work very well. On a cost comparison basis, it is going to be more expensive. Now, I got to tell you, maybe it's because I'm in the Bay Area, but I never hear about money from patients. I do not, ever. Now, they may complain at the front desk. I don't know, but it never comes to me. Now, I think the reason is it's not in my head. I don't know the cost of anything. I really couldn't tell them how much anything costs. And they're there to get well, and I don't know. Maybe they have the discussion with Annette, but she never comes back to me and indicates that anybody has a problem paying for it. I keep it to the lowest possible dosage, the minimum number of things. But I suppose if they were going to complain to me, they would say, well, you know, the standard process, they can't get anywhere else, so that's never an issue. They can't find it at the health food store, but they'll go down to GNC and be told, well, we've got an herbal blend just like that, and ours is half the cost, and that's probably true. I tell them, well, it's quality, not the price. And so if you could get something that matches the phytochemical profile and will do the job, then by all means, get the best deal you can. I'll go get some myself. But the fact is, I've been down there, and although the label indicates it's the same stuff, spectrographic analysis indicates it's not the same stuff. It's not necessarily the right species, nor is it phytoequivalent to what was used in the clinical trials. So you have to pay more to know that you're getting the right stuff. Is that a guarantee to work for you? No. But the clinical expectation is that it will work for your health. So when Medicare did an analysis, they found you could get something that had phytoequivalents for $40, but it wasn't every batch, and this was in Australia. For $10 more, then you know you've got it, because it can't leave MediHerb's facilities, and I've been there watching them do this, unless it matches the phytochemical profile they're looking for. So I know I can expect the results that clinical trials indicate are reasonable. All right. It should give fairly quick relief. So there's the patient experiencing GERD. If they'll take 2 to 4 tablets and give it a few minutes, then they can begin to get some relief right away because of the demulcent effect. It's going to coat, cool, and soothe. But if we really want to do it well, we're going to add Gastrex. So now on the food side, I've got HIPEP on the herb side. Gastrex. If I want it to work really rapidly, I'll open up the capsule, mix it in warm water, and drink it. What does it taste like, Gastrex? It's like licorice-flavored dirt. It's not bad. The anise that's in there gives it a licorice flavor. So I've got okra powder. Anybody who here likes okra? You need some serious therapy. Okra powder, bentonite, a powerful adsorbent, anise powder, chlorophyll from tillandsia, and porcine stomach and duodenal tissue extracts. It's a great vegetarian product. And yet vegans or vegetarians will come in and I'll tell them, I've got something that will help you. I want you to carefully read the ingredients. I do not detail the ingredients. I'm hoping that they have reading difficulty. I'm trying to get standard process to move down to 1-point type. Because I don't want to have a debate shape with them. Look, this will help you. It's not a cheeseburger. Read the ingredients, and if you have a problem, let me know. Half say yes, half say no. I never know what's going on in their head. I don't try to hide it. I just tell them, please read the ingredients, make sure you're comfortable with that. Or I'm hoping they don't really know what that is. And if not, I just let it go. Ignorance is bliss. It'll help you. Two capsules with a full glass of water 15 minutes before meals. I really make that 1 to 4. It depends on the size of the patient, how much abuse they intend to do to themselves with that meal. All right? So if I do high PEP and Gastrex, that's going to help by far most of these cases. But that's not going to heal. To heal, you know, we need okra pepsin E3. And this was Dr. Lee's cabbage juice analog. Giving the okra tilandsia again. Pepsin, carbamide, alginic acid, you'll see that in toothpaste, and allantoin. So a marvelous combination. But this product works better. This is actually not really correct. It's better to take this product an hour before or 2 hours after a meal. Because when I do okra pepsin, I really want it to coat the lining. And if I do it too close to food, it becomes a digestive aid. And it does that, but that's not what I want it to do. So 1 hour before a meal, then it's fully gone through and coated. And maybe even 3 hours afterward. If you read several recent textbooks, the tables indicate almost any and all meals are completely out of the stomach by 3 hours. Not all are out by 2, but all are out by 3 hours, no matter what you ate. Even if it didn't get digested, it's pretty much gone mechanically after 3 hours. So that would put you between meals. Essentially, you'll be between. So 1 hour before, at least 2 hours after for the best result. But I've got three incredibly powerful tools, all right? Now, let's say I've got a Crohn's case or ulcerative colitis. I can take advantage of these same tools by adding two more things. Pituitrophin, 6 per day, and dermatrophin, 3 per day. Just add pituitrophin, 6 per day, and dermatrophin, 3 per day. And then okra pepsin, Gastrex, and high PEP, as indicated before. And what you need for that case is 3 to 6 months. So 6 pituitrophin, 3 dermatrophin, 9 okra pepsin E3, 1 to 4 Gastrex as indicated, 1 to 3 high PEP as needed. And that will work. Now changing their diet will take time. We have to see what they're doing that we think is good or bad, what we can keep, what we have to move.